Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi Meseches Chulin Daf Kuf Chaf Hey. We are on the bottom of Kuf Chaf Dalad Amud Beis at the last line. Mishnah says the Mishnah Kulis is a bone, a hollow bone, which is meant to have some marrow sealed inside. Kulis hames. This time it's of a dead person, which is metame. It gives off tumor by way of maga, masa, through direct contact with carrying it, and oihel as well. Oihel, so if it's gonna be metame. Anything which is found under the same roof as this bone, if there is basar, there's edible material there as well, a kazayis worth, either on the outside or perhaps even on the inside. We'll see that in the Gemara. So by a etzem of a mace, it gives off tuma, maga, masa, possibly oihel. We turn to the next amud. Vikulis hamakdoshin. In similar fashion, if you have this time this kind of bone from a carbon. Rashi explains, it's a carbon that got disqualified, became noiser, for example. So it overstayed its expiry date. And the Gemara Pesachim tells us, the Mishnah, Kuf Chafam Beis, that the Chachamim applied a tuma to metame your hands. All those who handle this bone become tame. There's a gzera to discourage this from happening, from it becoming noiser, from becoming pigle, to discourage this type of thing. The Chachamim applied a tuma to all those who handle it. So in these two cases, even though it's a bone, which is technically inedible, there's going to be tumah given off. First one is the dead person, the mace. Second is the karban, which is a pigle or noiser. In these two cases, says the Mishnah, negeh b'hen, if one actually touches them directly, bein stumim, whether they're still sealed, so any matter that's found within is closed in there, bein nekuvim, whether there is a hole which allows some access to the marrow. Either way, it doesn't matter, tame, because the bone per se gives off tuma in these two cases. However, in the next two cases, the story changes. By a nevela, dead animal, or a sheretz, a dead creature, the tuma is limited to edible portions of those entities. But just a bone, which is inedible, is not really going to give off tuma, unless it contains some marrow, which is like flesh, which is edible. And the marrow is accessible from the outside. In that case, the bone around it constitutes a shomer. Rashi explains, for a shomer, for something which shields, which guards edible material, to be considered a shomer with respect to serving as a conduit, as a conductor for tumah in and out, as we learned a while ago, technically the bone can serve as a shomer. You don't have to touch the actual marrow, but there's a condition attached to it, provided that the marrow, the edible portion, is accessible, is exposed somewhat. In that case, the shomer, which is serving that accessible material, also takes on, to a certain extent, takes on the nature of that thing, becomes a conduit, becomes an accessory to it. But if it's sealed, in which case the food is locked out, inaccessible, so the bone per se, on its own, doesn't give off tumor, right? And cannot really serve as a conduit. It doesn't act as a shomer with respect to conducting tumah when the tumah is sealed and locked away. Okay, kulis nevela, you have this hollow nevela bone, v'kulis asheretz, or of a creature, and I give a hem. If one touches these bones from the outside, stumim, tahir, they're still sealed, they're tahir. Right, so if one touches them, he does not get tumah, but nekuvim, once they're punctured, kalshu, even a teeny little hole. Rashi explains, what good is a teeny hole? How are you going to access the marrow? He says, through your hair. You stick your hair in there while still attached to the person, right? So a hair which is attached to a person is part of the person, which means to say that he can become tame by inserting his hair and making contact with that impure, edible material. Nekuvim kolshu. In that case, metame b'maga. Now, if one contacts these bones, even from the outside, he has touched a shomer, an active shomer, which will give off tumah. But otherwise, if it's sealed within, there's no maga, and even there's no masa. That's an interesting point, because masa doesn't typically entail touching the item, just carrying it. He did carry it. He carried it inside the bone. Menai shafa masa. How do we know masa also follows the same rule, that if the marrow is stuck, is sealed inside, even if one carries that bone with the marrow inside, he's not going to be tameh, tameh leimar, because we have one pasuk next to the other. The first we have the negeya, the one who touches. The next one we have the one who carries. They're meant to be linked. Tameh leimar, hanegeya, vehanoise. Es shebo l'chol maga. Material which is open to maga, b'chol masa. So when maga applies, masa applies. However, leibav l'chol maga, if maga does not apply, such as marrow which is sealed and locked in, leibav l'chol masa, likewise masa won't apply either. Okay, so we had four examples of hollow bones. First was the mace of a corpse. Next one was the carbon, which became pasul, which is metami as well. Next is the kulis of a nevela, followed by kulis asharetz. Now, the kulis ha-mace really stands out because an adam whose mace gives off tumah in three forms, three venues: touching, carrying, and oil. Why does the Mishnah not mention anything about oil? Negeya in, says the Gemara, only if you touch that kulis ha-mace does one become tummy. Aval ma'il loy. But it sounds like if you're under the same roof, there's oil involved, there is no tumah. The question is why. Is it just plain bone? In which case, I understand it's only going to give off tumah through maga and masa, as Rashi explains. But if there's any basar involved, a kazayis of basar gives off tumah even by oil. Why are we leaving that out? What's going on here? Idi kazayis basar. There's some basar on the outside of that bone. Ba'oil nami latami. There should be tumas oil as well. Answers the Gemara, like a kazayis basar. There's no kazayis basar there. It's just plain bone. Okay, that's on the outside. What's going on inside? Is there marrow? Well, marrow counts like basar. There's a kazayis amount of mayach, of marrow, mibifnim, on the inside of that bone, mituma bekas va'ilo. Once again, that kazayis of edible material punches through, so to speak. It penetrates through that bone because it's locked, it's sealed inside. There's nowhere for it to go, so to speak. Meaning when there's a gap, a tefach high, then it stays contained. But if it's just squished, trapped, it punches right through and it just rises up. In which case, ba'il nami latame. If it's bakaz ba'il, then anything within the same roof becomes tame. The answer is, alecha kazayis mayach mibifnim. There is no kazayis mayach on the inside. Okay. So now we're back to maga and masa. But, hold it, we're not done. Vi mayach mibifnim. You know, even if there is no kazayis of basar, sometimes an aver, a full limb, a limb which features the elements of a limb, bone and flesh, even if there's no shi'ur, there's no kazayis of flesh, it can be classified as a limb, again, if it has those two elements, bone and flesh, to some extent. So if this bone, even if it currently doesn't have flesh around it, but if it would have been in its live form, attached to the person, even if it was stripped of its flesh, sometimes it could regrow, regenerate, by way of the marrow on the inside. Marrow on the inside has the ability, perhaps, to regenerate flesh on the outside as well, by drawing forth the nutrients and the appropriate elements which will generate that regrowth, in which case it still can be classified as a limb because it has potential to regrow that flesh. It's as though it has those two elements and qualifies as an aver. Once again, it should give off tumah even ba'ayel. Okay, so the third question is, vi mayach mibifnim, if the marrow on the inside, and even if there's no marrow now, says Rashi, marrow can regenerate, would regenerate. And that can in turn regenerate the flesh on the outside. Ma'ale arucha will trigger a healing process, a regrowth of flesh mibachutz, on the outside of that bone, in which case it has flesh and it has bone, in potential at least. Aver ma'al yuhu, it should be considered a proper limb, bo'il namilatam, in which case it should send out tuma even in the oil. Amar Rav Yehuda, b'idrachi, apparently the answer is no. Zoi semeres, what emerges from this is that marrow does not have the ability to regenerate a new flesh growth. Moyach mifnim, einoi ma'al arucha b'chutz. So back to just a plain bone, which gives off tuma through maga and masa, and not oil. Okay, ask the Gemara. So we have established that the bone, at least in the first example of the Mishnah, is just plain bone. There's no flesh. There isn't even a kazayas of marrow. But my yokimta, how have you established the lecha kazayas? There is no kazayas of basar yachi. If that's the case, move on to case number two. Second item in the Mishnah is the kulas hamikdash. Just bare bone? Why is there a tumah? The tumah the chacham applied is to the actual noiser material, the food material that overstayed its expiry date. But the bone, that's an edible. There's no tumah on that. There shouldn't be. The mikdash, amai metame. Why is there tumah at all? Next question. What about the third and the fourth item in the Mishnah as well? The nevela and the sheretz. Vesu, furthermore, kulis nevela, kulis ha-sheretz. Ki nikva amai metamu. Mishnah says if they got a hole and the inside is accessible, there's tumah. There's nothing to access. Valoi, right? There's no edible material. There's no kazayis of. You're right, says the Gemara. We have to make a shift. Halakash. The answer is like this. Reisha deleka kazayis. We're talking about two different cases. Item number one, the mace, is without a kazayis of basar, as we explained. That explains lack of oil. But sefer deka kazayis. But starting from item number 2 through 3 and 4, we're speaking there is a kazayis of marrow on the inside. And that would explain why they're a tummy. Okay, so Michael Mashman, so what's the point? What's the mission teaching us? I mean, these are basic halachas. Item number 1. Okay, that a plain bone is matame, b'maga, b'masa. We know that already. That Mugdash and material is tame, nevela is tame. We know that already. Says the Gemara, no. There's a point in each case. Mili, mili kamash, and the mission is actually teaching, highlighting certain aspects of halachas that we should know. Each one is unique and different. Okay. So let's start from number 1. Reisha, the first case. Kamash is teaching us. Demayach mifnim, enimala ruchim bachutz. This bare bone of a mace is not going to have too much oil, despite the notion that perhaps it can regenerate and regrow its flesh and be considered an aver. It doesn't happen. Okay, that's an interesting point to know, which has halachic ramifications. Mugdosh and Mike Mashmon. Now, what's the chiddush? What's the lesson in the second point? That the hegdish, the carbon bone, imparts tumah. The answer is, there is no flesh on the outside, only on the inside. And it's coming to teach us, that this this bone, even though there's no edible material on the outside, only on the inside, which is sealed away, so that cannot be transmitting tumah. Rather, the bone itself, since it's serving as an accessory to the edible inside, that's called shimush nei, it's serving noiser milsehi. That has ramifications. And the tumah, the rabbona, that applies to noiser, applies to the accessories to the noiser as well, including this bone. The amar mari baravua, amar rav yitzchak, likewise he told us, atzom es kachim, shishim shu noiser metam, and I say daim. Even these bones, who contain the sealed noiser, are metami the hands who touches them, hoyel v'nasa buses. Since they serve it as an accessory, as something which contains and supports the davar ha'asur, in this case the noiser inside, we have buses on Shabbos, right, by muktzah, something which serves as a buses and base, very similar sounding words, right, it serves as a base, as a platform, an accessory. So that's a chiddush, that the tumah de rabbanan stretches over to the buses as well. Item number 3 is the nevela. Avakav de'ika kazayis. There the chiddush is, that this hollow bone, even though there's a kazayis of marrow inside, it doesn't automatically give off tumah, because it's locked away. Nikva, yeah, if it got a hole in, yep. There'll be tumma, lo nikva le, but otherwise, no tumma. That's a big chiddush. Okay, so what emerges is that, in fact, we have a shift in the Mishnah between the various cases. In the first, we're talking about a kulis hames, which is just bare bone, with no flesh whatsoever on the inside and the outside. And there's no potential for regenerating flesh on the outside. That's why it's just considered a bone. It's not flesh. It's not an aver. And it only gives off tumma through maga and masa, not oil. On the other hand, the following cases, kulus hamikdashin, nevela, and sherets, entail some edible material as well, because eyes of marrow stuck on the inside. And that's why they give off tumma. Abaye will make a slight modification, not a very fundamental change in our approach to the Mishnah, just one slight difference. Abaye amar lo'ila mo'ech mifnim mala ruchim b'chutz. We can very well understand the Mishnah even when adopting this notion that the marrow can regenerate and regrow flesh on the outside. That takes us back to our question. So then the kulis hames, it has potential for regrowth. We deem it as though it has those two aspects, bone and flesh. It's a limb, but limb gives off tumma ba'oil. Here we're speaking about a unique case that he sawed it, he cut it, b'shashifa. He took this hollow bone, and he sliced part of it, one side. So even though he didn't slice it through and through, he sliced it on one side, that will disrupt its regrowth process. It will no longer regrow its flesh. Ukad Rabbi Lazar, Dam Rabbi Lazar, Kulis Rishafel Arachatmea, L'Rachba Tahira, depends how he cut it. If he cut it lengthwise, so it was just a straight cut, right? Then it's still tummy, which means to say that it still has its potential for regrowth and can be still considered an aver if it were still alive, etc. So reckoning with that, theoretical circumstance, and that grants it an aver status, because in this state it could have regrown, but if it's l'rachva, along its circumference, so here's the kulis, and he sliced it around and around. Okay, so he cut it around and around. Tahira, it's tahir. V'siman echtikla, good way to remember which direction. Take a look at the palm tree. Rashi explains if they take a strip off the surface of that tree, lengthwise, top to bottom, it can still survive because the sap will bypass that, missing part. But if you go l'rachba, if you strip a layer off the circumference around and around that palm tree, the sap is going to get stuck. It's not going to have a way to go up. And eventually it will just dry out and die out. So what Abaye did was that he maintained our understanding, our configuration of the Mishnah. Just he changed one detail. In the first case, the kulis hames, there's only maga and masa, there's no oil, because there's no buster there now. And in terms of potential regrowth, theoretically there would be, but it was sliced. Okay, Rabbi Yechon Amar, here comes another approach to the Mishnah. No, lo'olam dika kazayis. The entire Mishnah is speaking that there is a kazayis of basar present. Okay, so let's not split the Mishnah into two depicting different scenarios. No, it's all one and the same type of case. The bone features flesh. Or even if there's no flesh on the outside, umayech mifnim malaruchem bachutz, the marrow on the inside can regenerate growth. So bottom line is, we have to deal with the flesh element being present, so to speak. Okay? We view it as though there's flesh. Answer your question. In item number one, kulis hames, with flesh, there should be tumas oil. There is. Umayah noigeya adiktani. When the Mishnah speaks about a fellow touching that bone, sometimes nageya is synonymous with oil. Mile. It's referring to tumas oil as well. right? Ma'il is also a form of interaction. You're hovering over the item. The item is hovering over you, etc. There is an indirect interaction. It's not as direct as actually touching it. But it's just as when you touch, you're interacting. When you're under the same, when you're hovering over, you're also interacting. You're shielding it. It's shielding you. There's a relationship between you and the tumah. So sometimes the term nageah can refer to oil as well. That's Rabbi Yechonah's interesting chiddush. Oil and nageah are synonymous. Okay, it says the Gemara, "Bimayach mefnim alaruchim b'chutz." If you're telling me that the marrow can regenerate the regrowth of flesh on the outside, so let's proceed to the next items in the Mishnah. Kulis nevela, right? Kulis hasheretz. So we've clarified the first case and also the second case. That we're speaking that there's basar on the carbon bone, so there's this noisa, which is matame, very good. But what about the next items, number 3 and 4? Yachi. Vimayach mishum kulas nevela, kulas hasheretz, right? 3 and 4. Hila nikva mai toherim. If the flesh can regenerate, regrow, if the animal is still alive, so it has the status of a limb. Right, a limb, right, has flesh and bones. And this item is deemed to have those two aspects as well, is in potential, which gives it the halachic status of a limb. Now we know that a limb of an avela is mitzame, gives off tumah, like maga, masa, right? In one of two cases, either if there is actual basar there, because eyes have basar, so that's an account of the amount of basar qualifies as a metame. And even if there's no amount, even if there's a minuscule amount of basar, but if this item qualifies as an aver, once again we'll go back to that limb concept. It's a limb, it's a full part, it has both elements of an aver, flesh and bone, that gives off tumah. So even if the bone is hollow, it is sealed, the marrow is sealed inside, that's irrelevant. This bone has a status of an aver. She gave off tuma as is. Kulis nevela, kulis hasheres, kilo nikva, even without that hole. Even if they were not punctured, I might tell you why they tore. Omar Rabbi Ben Yomar Bar Gil, Omar Rabbi Yechon, let me explain to you what's going on. There is marrow in these bones, but it's dried up, it's shriveled, it cannot regenerate any growth. We're speaking that there's a kazayis of that marrow, hamiskashish, which is dang, which is, Rashi says, yovish. It's dried up. So it's clanging, you hear it, rattling. That's the case. Now this cannot regenerate any flesh. It doesn't have that ability, it's already on its way out. But it is edible, and since it has a kazayis, it will give off tumah. That will explain all the items in the Mishnah. Let's start from the first, Kabi Meis. First item, Tumah Bukasv Oilu. Ultimately, there is a kazayis of Meis material inside that bone, trapped inside, which will sprout forth Tumah. And since it's radiating Tumah, it gives off Tumah in all directions. Maga, Masa, Oil. Next item. What about the carbon? Rashi explains, Harishim Shu Noiser. The fact is that bone is serving as a container for the Noiser inside, so there's Tumah on that as well. But by the Nevela, Kiva the Miskash Keshu, since we're speaking about this dried up marrow, which doesn't have the potential to generate any regrowth on that flesh, so now the bone is no longer regarded as an aver. Right? It doesn't have bone and flesh elements to it. Rather, it's merely serving as a container for the edible material inside. So the bone per se is not going to be matami. Kiva the miskash kashu, since the marrow is in this state, so then nikva in. The bone was punctured, which renders the marrow accessible. That triggers tumas Maga and Tumas Masa as well. Loi Nikvalei, but otherwise there's no hole. Then the Tumas trapped inside, and no Tumah will be given off. As we learned in the Mishnah, when there's no possibility of Tumas Maga, then Masa is also disabled. Okay, it's interesting. So, Rabbi Yochanan, really the first item, the case of the mace, is going to give off Tumah, B'maga, B'masa, and oil as well. And the Losha and Negei on the Mishnah can sometimes be a reference to oil too. That's his take on it. Oil and Maga are synonymous terms. Now, in terms of what's going on inside the bone, there is a Mayach, but it's Miskashkish. It can't regrow anything. It's merely a kazayis of edible material trapped inside by a maze. Halach is when it's trapped, it just goes all over the place. It just shoots up. So there's tumah. By the carbon, ultimately the bone is containing nicer, so there's tumah on the bone as well. It's a basis la nicer. By the nevel and the sharetz, again you have to access the you have to be able to access the edible material inside to generate the tumah. Okay, now on this point that the term Nigea can sometimes refer to oil, it's a big revolution in terms of semantics, it says the Gemara. Amar Rab Avin Vitema, some say Rab Yezir Rab Avin, Afananim Tanina. I'll find you another Mishnah, which as well pairs up the term Nigea with the term oil. Uses Nagea to describe oil. Hanagea b'chazi zayis. Fellow's standing next to half a zayis of mace material. He's touching it with his hand. Uma'ahil al-chazi zayis. And his other hand is hovering above the second half of a zayis. So in total, it's two halves. This one is touching, this one is oil. Oy'chazi zayis ma'ayil alo. Well, the second half of zayis is suspended over him, which is also a form of oil. Tame becomes tame, so we join together the two halves. Although this one's being touched and this one's experiencing the oil, they're close enough, they're similar enough to be combined. So that makes sense if really oil is a version of noigeya. So they're close enough, you could join them together. Iyamas b'shleim, this works well if you say chad shmo, it's one form, one method, one type of interaction. Touching, hovering, it's all the same thing. Shemach mitzvah, that explains why you could join them together to get you to the total of a kazayis, which is required for tumah, right? Eli amrish reish menina, but if you're going to tell me that negeya and oil are two separate entities, mi mitzvah, how could you combine them? How could they join together? But now we have a Mishnah. You can only pair up similar experiences, but it's not zaklal. This is the rule. Kol shum shem echad, when something is made shem echad, mitzvah, you can join together. V'tomei, you can make a tomei shnei shemas, but if we're talking about two different types of experiences, like touching and carrying, unrelated, right? Toh, you can't join them together. Oh, apparently, oil is considered like a form of physical interaction. It's like negeya. Elamai, so what are you saying? Chad shmo, touching and oil is one and the same. Let's move on to the next part of that same Mishnah. We will see just the opposite. Avol continues the Mishnah. Turn to the base. And again, b'chizayis. So he's touching b'chizayis, a half a zayis of the mace. But over acher, and regarding the other half, he's not hovering, nor is the item hovering over him. But they're under the same roof. But over acher, there's another roof material, ma'il alav, which is hovering over the person, va'al kachatzi zayis, on the other half of zayis. Tohar, he's okay because he never interacted with the zayis at once. Why? V'chachmo, if touching and oil is one and the same experience, amai tohar, why is he tohar? Ultimately, he was touching a half, and he experienced oil with the other half. Elokashi reishin. So you're right, but now the first part of the Mishnah, which indicated that oil and negeya are synonymous, will now be difficult to understand. Amar Bezerah, I'll explain to you what's going on in the Reish. Really, this Mishnah does not pair up Negeya and Oyel, the two separate things. In the Reish, you want to know why we join them together? I'll tell you why. Amar Bezerah, Betumah Ritzutza. So let's go back to the ratio. There was a half and another half. The first half he touched directly. Okay, no questions there. The second half, although it describes it as being in the oil, it was a unique type of oil. It was trapped between two armoires, two, you know, closets, where the gap between the two chests is less than a tefach. So the tumah stuck in there was considered trapped. There's not enough room to be considered, you know, contained in its own environment. It's trapped in there. You need that the area should be at least a tefach by a tefach, tefach square, to be considered the proper entity. Otherwise, considered squished, trapped. And what happens then? Similar to what we learned before, it just shoots up. The tumah just shoots up. And in that case, if he puts his hand over where the tumah is lying, even if it's 10 feet up in the air, since the tumah is rising, so to speak, it's not a standard oil type of situation. A regular oil is where you have a proper room, you have a kazai sitting there, so anything under the same roof, you know, becomes affected by that tumah. It's considered, you know, the extended environment of the tumah. Here it's direct interaction with the tumah. Tumah's trapped, it's just shooting up, it's radiating up. It's like you actually touch that tumah directly. In this case, for sure, it qualifies as it's considered like an element of negeya, and it can join together with the other hand, which is touching tumah. So this is a unique type of oil interaction, which indeed qualifies as a form of negeya. For tumah ritzutza, we're talking about a tumah which is trapped in beis megdolim, these two armors, askin, and that's what we're talking about. But in beinayim pasiach tefach, without a tefach gap between these two megdolim, the kula negeya, so the tumah just rises up. And his hand, which is hovering above it, is like touching it. It's like interacting with the tumah itself, which is radiating up. So in fact, according to this approach, yeah, this Mishnah does not hold that we join together negeya and oil are two separate things, except when it's a tumah ritzutza, where in fact it's considered like he's touching the tumah itself. No. So our search continues. Uman Tana. So where's the Tana? Who's the one that, in fact, considers negeya and oil as synonymous? The curry, the oil, negeya, calls tumas oil negeya. Who is he? Okay, so Rabbi Yechon had told us that there is such a shita, our Mishnah. Where do we find such a concept elsewhere? Rabbi Yosi, the son of Rabbi Yosi Omer, who goes? Vloit harvat, a big spoon fill of wreck, of decomposure. Rashi says it's halacha mishum Sinai, that there is tumah coming out of this amount of decomposure, by way of touching, by way of carrying, by way of oil, right? Metame b'maga, b'masob oil. Now the question is practically, b'shlame b'masob oil, I understand how one can receive tumah from this mass of decomposure, whether by carrying it, because he carried the whole thing, or b'oil, or he hovered above it. Fine, okay, timely, l'kule, when he carries it, he's carrying the whole thing. B'kamayu b'kula kule, and he's hovering above it, so again, so he's over the whole mass of decomposed material. All the granules are beneath him. Elena Geb, how do you explain getting tumah by touching? I mean, he's just touching those five granules that his finger is resting upon. These are separate granules. It's not one connected entity. So how did he get tumah from the whole thing? Elena Geb, Elena Geb, he didn't touch the whole thing. Elam Shmami, no, apparently. You have to say, my, what did the Mishnah mean when it said Noigeh he touched? It doesn't mean touching mail. It was referring to oil, which explains why his tummy, because after all, he was mail on the whole clump of granules. What do you mean? The Mishnah says both. You can't say Noigeh is mail. The Mishnah says Maga, Masa, and oil. Apparently, Maga and oil are two different experiences. One is oil, one is really Maga. Vaktani Noigeh, Vaktani mail. How can you say it's one and the same? And the Mishnah is just redundant. Amar Abaye says, Abaye, you know, a regular oil from a distance is not negeya. He's being affected by the extended, you know, effect of the tumah. That's not negeya. But if the oil was very close by, if he's within a tefach of distance to the actual tumah, although he's hovering above it, and the mechanics in which he's receiving the tumah works through the oil system, but since he's very close, intimately close to that tumah, within a tefach, which is considered its environment, he's in the immediate environment of the tumah within that tefach, that is considered like a form of touch. That's such a direct interaction which can be referred to with the lashon negeah. But above that is merely called oil, and is unrelated to negeah. I'm not by you. Lamata mitefach, within a tefach to the tumah. So if he's hovering above the tumah so close, oil negeah. We call it oil negeah, a very direct form of oil, a direct interaction with the tumah. And in fact, that justifies that earns the term negeah. Lamala mitefach oil greda. But if the oil is happening above a tefach, so the tumah is here and he's sitting all the way up there. So although it's oil, but that's not called oil negeah, it's just plain oil. So when the Tana spoke about the tarvat rekav, the spoonful of giving of tumah b'masa, we understand what that means, carrying. But oil, we understand, he's hovering at it from a distance, hovering above it from a distance. When he spoke about negeah, it didn't mean physically touching it with his finger. That wouldn't work because he's only touching a couple of granules. How does he encompass the entire amount? We're speaking about a low down, close up oil. And that's why it's called negeah. Rav Amar, no, he says, afilu lamala mitevach nami, oil negeahu. I maintain, like Rav Yechanan, that even a regular oil, standing above it, from a distance, beyond the tefach, is also considered a form of touching. It's considered interacting. It's considered like he's contacting it from a distance. Like negeah. As per Rabbi Yechon's approach, that the term negeah, the term oil, are interchangeable. Ve'echidami oil greida. Bamshach. Now, when the Mishnah spoke about the tarvat rekav, giving of tumah b'masa, okay, that's good. But oil and b'maga, what does that mean? So b'maga, I maintain, means any form of oil. If he's leaning above it, even 10 feet up, that's called negeah. So how do you explain the term oil in the braisa? B'hamshacha. There's yet another version of oil, which even I agree is not synonymous with touching, cannot be labeled as negeah. Rather, it earns its distinct label, oil, and oil only. What is that called? B'hamshacha. Rashi explains, but we have a third party, third element. So the regular oil is, I'm over the item is over me, right? Hamshacha means that we're under the same roof. So the roof, that ceiling, is transporting, so to speak, the tumah from the contaminated item to me. And in fact, Rashi says that's the ikur oil in the Torah. Torah speaks about things that are under the same roof. But in any case, that certainly could only be called oil, because there is no direct interaction. It's a third party who's making that connection. Okay, so what emerges at this point is as follows. All seem to agree that if it's a tumah ritzutza, if it's a squished trap tumah which just shoots up, so then wherever you're interacting, even 10 feet up in the air, if your hand is above the tumah, it's like you touched it, because the tumah itself is radiating and rising up, so to speak. All agree that Baham Shacha, so two items under the same roof, that's not considered a direct interaction. It's a very indirect oil, and certainly only qualifies as oil. It will never be called Negeya. What if I'm directly over the Tumah, or vice versa? Tumah is directly over me. According to Rava, that's considered, could be called Negeya, because it's a direct interaction. And Abaye maintains it depends where. Within a Tefach, it's a direct interaction and can be labeled as negeah, but above tefach, it's merely called oil. Amar Rava mina minila. Says Rava, how do I know that even oil from a distance can be regarded as a form of negeah? It's not. We have a Mishnah. Rabbi Yosi Aimer. Okay, so this is Rabbi Yosi again, who, according to Rava, was of the opinion that even oil at a distance is regarded as a subset, as a variation of negeah. So Rabbi Yosi speaking, the Sanya Rabbi Yosi Aimer, Chavilei Mita. So the ropes that they use to string up the beds, instead of springs, they have the ropes going back and forth. So you have a sort of a braided rope system with some holes in between. And the holes aren't really, the gaps aren't big enough. They're not a tefach in size. They're smaller. Usrigi chalonis, another example of a sort of a lattice, some sort of window bars that are crisscrossing. So if these items are lying on the floor, between the first and second floor, there's a hole, there's some sort of staircase, and there's tum on the first floor. These will now form a barrier, blockage, to prevent the tumah from rising up to the second floor, because they become like part of the floor, and it blocks the tumah from coming up. Chaytetin, they form a barrier between the first and second floor. To prevent the tumah from crossing over to the second side. Okay. Simple aloch. Person al pnei mes. Ba'aver. Here it comes. So he took this rope, you know, lattice, and suspended it over a dead person, a mace, vavir in the air. Okay, so a negea kineged hanekev. Comes a person, and he puts his finger, he's negea, let's just be mindful of the terms here, negea touches the airspace, which is really, he's doing his oil, right? He's over the mace, kineged hanekev, so he touches over the mace in the gap, in the airspace. So there's nothing between him and the mace below. Tummy becomes tummy because he's over the mace. Shaloi kenegad negev, what he touches. Shaloi kenegad, not at the gap, meaning he touches the top of the rope. The rope forms a barrier between him and the mace, and he's tar. Okay, so says the Brisa. Let's analyze the wordiology of the Brisa. Hechidami. Now, how high is he? Where is he in the... how close is he to the mace? Ilei milamata mitefach. Where is the rope? Within a tefach to the mace, it should become part of the mace. Shaloi kenegad hanekev amai tar. So if he touches, shaloi kenegad hanekev, not on the gap, rather he touches on top of the rope. Why is he tar? Mace b'ksusu. It's like a mace with his clothing. His clothing are tummy as well. Umeis b'ksusu matami. The mace and his clothing are matami. The begadim, his clothing become like his shrouds. They become secondary to the mace. They become batel, nullified to the mace, and they transmit tumah as well. So this rope system is covering the mace. It in itself is like the mace, and when one touches that rope, it's like he touched the mace. A lovely malam tefach. Apparently, this rope system is suspended above, at a distance, beyond the tefach of the mace. Okay, once we establish that, how does the Mishnah refer to this fellow who put his finger there? He put his finger in the gap. Technically, what would you call that? You would say it's oil, right? He's above the mace. And guess what? The kokar le negea, and the Brisa refers to him as a negea. Touched. What did he touch? Airspace? Oil. It's oil, right? Above the... Apparently, oil and negea are one and the same. The term negea can refer to oil, even at a distance. Even though it's not within the tefach to the maze. Amar Abayi, no. Says Abayi, no. I insist that it's within a tefach only. Le'el olmata mit tefach. Certainly, we're speaking that this rope thing is within a tefach to the mace. And that's why that area is called Negev, because it's a very close oil in its immediate vicinity. That's called Negev, the Ka'amris. And in terms of your question, which you asked, Mesek Susuhu, that the rope itself should be considered like the shroud of the mace and give off tumah. Mesek Susuhu Mabatel, a big difference. The shrouds around the mace, Dachrich, and he nullifies to the mace, they become part and parcel of the Haile Mevatla, but here are the ropes. He doesn't intend on leaving there. It's not Mevatla to the mace. Therefore, it does not have tumah like the mace. At most, it's like an oil. Okay, so if he put his finger in the gap, that's right over the mace. There's the oil, but he puts his finger above the rope, which is between him and the mace. There's no tumah. Says the Gemara, now according to you, the rope is squishing the mace, so to speak. It's trapping him. There is no tefach gap of airspace between the mace and the rope system above him. That's a trapped tumah, and we know that a trapped tumah rises to the occasion of a dehavi ketumah b'tumuna. It should be like a tumah which is buried and trapped. And what happens? Bekas v'oila. It punches through, it forces its way through and goes up. So if tumah is lying within a proper room, there is at least a tefach of airspace above it. That constitutes a contained tumah in its own environment, and it stays within. But if the airspace above the tumah, between himself and the barrier, the roof, is less than a tefah, it's considered a trapped tumah, which just shoots right through. So now the fellow put his finger even above the rosh to become tummy. Because Savar Rabbi Yaisi, who we're talking about? Rabbi Yaisi holds there's no such concept. Contrary to the accepted view that tumah, which is trapped, rises, he disagrees with this concept. Because Savar Rabbi Yaisi, tumah tumun, even a trapped tumah ina bekas, does not rise up. How do you know that? Where do we find that Rabbi Yaisi argues on this point? It's not. We have another Mishnah, Maseches Ahalos, Tevas. So again, this is an armoire, right, with drawers. Tevas HaMigdal, right, this tall cupboard. Sheyesh B'Paseach Tefach. So the drawer is big enough to create its own containment, its own environment. It's a Tefach high and a Tefach wide. So the Tumah within it is considered contained and does not affect its surroundings. Ve'en B'Tziyos B'Paseach Tefach. But the way out of that drawer, the drawer doesn't open up far enough to make a big, you know, to allow for a big gap. It's just a smaller than a tefach gap. So basically, the tumah is sort of trapped inside, but it's contained in its own self-contained environment, and there is no properly sized conduit, so to speak, passageway between the tumah and the house, because the drawer doesn't open up far enough. The opening is not like a tefach. Okay, so what's the halacha now? Tumah b'soich, if there's tumah inside that drawer, havai is tumah. The whole house becomes, the whole room becomes tumah. Why? Because as we'll see in a minute, there's a halacha. Some say it's in the rabbanon. Since ultimately that tumah has to find its way out somehow. It's going to come out of that drawer somehow, and it's going to go through the house. The Chachamim applied a tumah to the entire root, entire exit route of that tumah, as though it's already there. So the house is tummy, but tumah v'bayis, tumah in the room, what happens to the item? Let's say there is something in that drawer. Does that get affected by the tumah in the house? No. The tumah doesn't travel into the drawer. Right? That's the halacha. Tumah likes to leave. It's not inevitable that tumah will end up inside the drawer, so whatever's in the drawer is safe and sound, it's protected. Tumah b'bayis, mashal b'seich ha'tor, what's inside that drawer is okay, it's protected. V'pnei, you know why? Shaderach tumah latzeis. It's regular for the tumah to leave, to be taken out of that drawer through the house. So the whole exit system is tumah. V'ein derach tumah l'kanet, as opposed to tumah going in, that's not anticipated, so the drawer is okay. Rabbi Yosi Matahir. Rabbi Yosi says, look, even in the first case where the tumah is trapped inside that drawer, the house is okay. Who says the tumah will be transported through the house? Maybe you could burn it up inside the drawer. He'll never make it out. First, you can chop it up and take it out piecemeal, less than a kazayis, through the house. Or to burn it in its place. Okay. But Tony is safe, and the Mishnah continues. Hamida Pesach. Let's say he put this armor with the tumah, the kazayis of the mace, in its drawer. He put it at, it's situated at the entranceway to the room. Pesach Chutz. The opening of that drawer, it's going to open to the outside. So in this case, we're all safe, because it's going to make its way out. It's not going to travel into the house. Tumah Pesach, by his Torah, tumah that's inside that drawer does not affect anything in the house. Likewise, tumah b'bayis, mashal b'seich ha'tor, whatever tumah is in the house, does not affect anything inside that drawer. And again, this is only because the drawer is large enough to constitute its own self-contained environment. It's a tefach by a tefach. But otherwise, if it would be trapped inside, if the space inside would not qualify as a contained area, if it would be smaller than a tefach by a tefach, then that tumah, in fact, would just shoot out, and the whole room would be tummy. Okay, Tony Allah. And the mission continues with another response from Rabbi Yosi. Turn to the next one. Tani Allah, Rabbi Yosi mitar. Rabbi Yosi argues and says it's tar. Now, what's Rabbi Yosi referring to? Ahai, which case of the two cases? Ilim HaSeif on the second part of the Mishnah, where the furniture is sitting at the doorway. Well, the Tanakama also said it's tar. There's no argument there. Ilim HaSeif, Tanakama, Nami, Tanakama as well, Turika mitar, also considers it tar, as explained. Ella, rather, Rabbi Yosi must be going back on the first case. Ella, the Gomer Tanakama. The Rabbi Yossi is arguing on 2 points. Tanakhama basically stated 2 things. One was implicit. One was explicit, one was implicit. He clearly said that the Kazayas Tumah in that drawer will affect everything in the house when it's anticipated that that Tumah will travel through the house eventually. So the entire house becomes sort of the Tumah domain. I take issue with that. Who says it's ever going to come to that? Maybe he'll destroy it in the drawer. He'll never make its way out. Second point. That the Tanakhama implies. You see, look at the second case there. The sefer, furniture sitting at the entranceway, because the drawer is big enough, it's self-contained, and the tumah will not affect the house. Oh, but let's say the tumah will be, the drawer will be smaller in size, wouldn't have the tefach by tefach configuration. Trap tumah, oh, spreads out. I disagree with that as well, says Rabbi Yis. Okay, let's see inside. Ella, rather, the Kama Tanakhama, Tanakhama stated, tumah besecha by his tumah. The tumah which is inside the drawer will affect the whole house. For one of two reasons. Either if it's a large enough drawer, which is a self-contained environment, there's no spreading now, but eventually, since that tumah will, is expected to leave the drawer and go through the house, the whole house becomes tumah. The whole house becomes sort of the domain of that tumah. The tumah tumuna bekas. Alternatively, if that drawer is too small to constitute its own environment, if it's smaller than a tefach in size, the tumah will just spread out. Rabbi Yossi takes issue with both. Rabbi Yossi says, I take issue with both. The first point and the second one. Come to Rabbi Yossi, the Kamras. Regarding what you said, derech tumah lot says, it's inevitable. Perhaps the tumah will never make it out, it will be destroyed at its source. They can chop it up, take it out piecemeal, or burn it in its place. Regarding the second point, I disagree entirely. As to your position that the trap tumah will rise up, tumah, tumah, any bakas, incorrect, I disagree. Even a trap tumah will not affect its environment, will stay contained, self-contained, and dormant. Okay, so this proves that according to Rabbi Yossi, even a tumah will not rise up, will not break through the barriers and be metame its environment, as Rabbah had established. Coming up in the Gemara soon will be a kasha. We'll find a different Rabbi Yossi which seems to say otherwise. After that, tomorrow, Be'ezras Hashem. In the interim, back to the Mishnah with the four cases, the four bones. First was the mace. Well, that's the metame b'maga b'masa. Why not b'oil? We have two approaches in the Gemara. Either we're speaking, there's no flesh element here. Or going to Rabbi Yechon, there is. And it is metame b'oil. When the Mishnah spoke about maga, maga sometimes can be used as a substitute for oil. Oil and maga are synonymous. We came up with four different levels of oil. When it's a tumah ritzutza, so it rises, so anything above that is considered like touching, because it's like sort of extending and rising, like you're touching the actual tumah. On the other side of the spectrum, we have hamshacha, the tumah and the person under the same roof. That's certainly not negeya, that's a very indirect type of oil. When he's hovering above, either he's hovering above the tumah, or the tumah above him, according to Rava, that could be called negeya, according to Rabbi Yossi's approach. Only within a tefach to the tumah, it's a direct interaction, but above that is called oil only. The other approach to the Mishnah was that we're speaking that there is no flesh at all, right? In the case of the kulis hameis. But regarding item 2, 3, and 4, the kulis hamikdashin, the veil and the sherets, we're certainly speaking there is a kazayis of edible material inside, and that explains why the mikdashim is tameh. Because even the bone, which is an accessory to the noiser, becomes tamim the rabbanon, garnered in the veil and the sherets, provided that the item is punctured, which allows access to the edible material, which opens it up to tumas maga. And likewise, at least in the case of the nevela, there's tumas maga and tumas masa as well, because masa is linked to maga. All the best to you, Natzlacharach.